Welcome to the Fourth Age podcast, brought to you by Dragonmount.com. This week, Dragonmount.com is proud to bring to you a series of new on-air personalities for the Fourth Age podcast. The next few episodes will begin with the introduction of the new team member. This week's victim is Virginia O'Connor. Virginia, sorry we have to put you on this hotspot, but say hi to our listeners and tell us a bit about yourself.
Thanks, Andrew. Actually, apart from being a little bit nervous right now, I don't feel too much like a victim at all. I'm really excited to be a part of the podcast team. I actually can't believe it. It's really cool. So, because I've been a fan of the Fourth Age podcast almost since the beginning. I have all the episodes saved in my iPod, and I like to listen to them periodically. And I also like to go to the DragonMount.com website and read the discussions and the comments that people have posted to the podcast and other discussions. It's always good for fun. And I think, like everybody listening, I've been a big fan of the Wheel of Time. I think I started reading the series about 1992, and I've just lost track of how many times I've gone through the whole series. And I also like to listen to the books on CD, read by Michael Kramer and Kate Redding, I believe. They're good. And, let's see, some of my friends kind of tease me, actually, that I'm a little bit like Loyal myself, in that I'm usually carrying a book around with me no matter how short a time I'm going to be gone or where I'm going. And a lot of times it's one of the Wheel of Time books. Some of my friends that don't even read the series have come to recognize the covers. In real life, I'm an artist. I paint and sculpt. I concentrate mostly on animals, dogs, horses, some wildlife. I recently finished a life-size bobcat bronze for a local zoo, and it came out pretty well, so I'm really excited about that. The other thing I do for a living is sell real estate, or at least in this market, I try to sell real estate. Nobody's doing much right now, but like Gall says, everything changes and the dream floats along the wind until the dream ends, so hopefully there'll be better days ahead. So that's about it. Thanks, Andrew. Back to you.
Okay, so if any of you listeners have any questions for Virginia, please email podcast@dragonmont.com as you would with any fan mail, and I'm sure she'll answer any of your questions. Now, to briefly introduce myself, I am Andrew Miller, the new producer for the Fourth Age podcast. It is not set in stone that I will be one of the on-air personalities you're likely to hear on a regular basis, but if people like what I do, there is no harm in my sticking around.
So, before we begin our discussion today, I'd like to assure all the listeners that the original members of the podcast team are not gone and not forgotten, and as Min's friend Mahiro said, not kidnapped. They're just on a brief hiatus, they had some personal business to take care of, and they should be back with us shortly.
Now, please be advised that we are Wheel of Time fanatics, not scholars. So please, if you have any criticisms or any concerns or corrections for us, email it in to thepodcast@dragonmount.com. The doors are always open for corrections and fan mail. And the only spoiler warning you're going to get today is this one right now. There will be spoilers. Now, we are lucky enough to have with us today Andrew G., whose voice you will all recognize. He will lead us into today's discussion. Welcome back, Andrew G.
Thanks, Andrew. It's good to be back. This week, we'll be having a discussion on the power of spirit, as well as various theories involving bonding and linking. And for that, we'll turn it over to Virginia.
Thanks, Andrew. I've made a little list of all the forms of linking and bonding that Andrew and I could come up with. And the first one is the one that we're all the most probably familiar with at this point, which is the Aes Sedai to a non-channeler warder. And as we found out when Birgitta was bonded by Elaine, that can now actually be Aes Sedai to male or Aes Sedai to female, and it seems to work pretty much the same way. They do seem to have a little bit more mirroring of emotions in that particular type of link. The second type of link is Aes Sedai to a shaman, and that's a relatively new form of linking. We have had links from channeler to channeler before when the Aes Sedai Elana bonded Rand, but as far as we know, that was the first one that was done that way. And now, of course, we have Aes Sedai to a shaman and a shaman to Aes Sedai coming and trying to come into balance as far as numbers go. And the shaman first began linking with their wives, those that were married, and so that was a channeler to non-channeler link. There was also transfer of some transfer of emotion and feelings between them. They could tell certain things about how they were feeling, which seems to be typical of most of the warder-type bonds. Then we have another form of bonding, which is a little bit different, which is the Aiel bonding, which is actually usually between, as far as we know, two non-channelers, but the linking is actually performed by someone who can channel, in this case a wise one, and that can be first brother and sister, or that could be between two men or two women, or presumably a man and a woman, but it's the channeling wise one who actually performs the link. Neither of the people that are being bonded necessarily have anything to do with it. And the only other thing that we know about that particular type of link was that it was mentioned that the wise one, Malayne, could not be a part of that link because she was pregnant, and the bond would affect the unborn child and would be too much stress for the child and probably be very detrimental to it. And then we have a type of linking which is involuntary by the Shanchan with the item, and actually both of the people involved, as we know now, and this is a spoiler, are both channelers. The Suldam and the Damani both channel, although the Suldam don't believe that they do. And that was referred to by Morden, I believe, as an involuntary circle or link. I can't remember the woman's name, but it was someone who created it and gave it to the Shanchan in Shandar, over in Shanchan.
Okay, but it was someone who counted themselves Aes Sedai.
Right, and she herself was leashed eventually, too, because, of course, as they said, she was a Marth Damani as well.
The first Adam was made by the Aes Sedai Dain, who brought it to Luthier Pandrag.
Yeah.
In an attempt to curry favor with him.
They said that her scream shook the Tower of Ravens when she was leashed.
Actually, they gave a specific tower for that one. It was the Tower of Midnight, because it's the Court of the Nine Moons. It's one of the interesting things.
Yeah.
Sometimes the big white book is our friend.
Okay. The other thing that I thought of was actually not a real different type of bond, but in the case of Rand, we have multiple bonds on the same man. We have Alana, who bonded him in the typical Aes Sedai to Warder fashion, although she found to her dismay that she couldn't control him or compel him at all through the bond the way they can apparently typically do that with their warders. And then Min, Elaine, and Avienda all got together, and Elaine made a form of the Aiel bonding combined with the warder bond so that non-channeling Min could actually bond Rand as well as Elaine and Avienda. So he's got more strings tied to him than almost anybody. These aren't really bonds, these are circles, and going into those types of circles, we know that women can link to women up to a number of 13 without men. After that, they need to bring a man into the circle in order to expand it. We know that women can link to men, and we know that men cannot link together without a woman involved. But I believe, if I remember correctly, that in the case of men linking to women, that the man will have to control the circle at that point. I'm not positive about that. I remember something about Grendel saying something about that. Then the last thing that we came up with was the Corsuvra, or Mind Trap. They were actually put onto Mogedion and Sindane, who I believe is Lanfear reincarnated. There is some transfer of emotion back and forth from that. They can feel him touching the Corsuvra, and I don't know what we aren't told what he can feel from them. But apparently that particular type of involuntary link can only be done in the Pit of Doom, and would probably have to involve... It doesn't say if it involves a channeler or not.
There is indication that he's able to sense when they're telling the truth or lying, is there not?
I think if I remember properly, he gets a lot of information from what he has via the Corsuvra, because she's Mogedion in particular is constantly afraid that he's looking over her shoulder, like, all the time. And while that's
exactly.
Kind of typical for her, at the same time, it's also something I think she's aware of, as it's a logistical probability, or a possibility, rather.
In particular, I remember her freaking out when she attacked Nynaeve, when she was on the boat with Lan, and her constant paranoia about her stepping out of line, and if Morden caught her, beware.
Yeah, she was really afraid that he would know somehow.
I'd like to add in that I remember that the links to the Dark One that the Forsaken have, the black wires that Rand sees first in the early books that connect them, I believe that those are a spirit bond of some sort.
And that sparked an idea that I had as well, because what those black wires are is a conduit that is keeping the taint from getting to that channeler's connection, which is why they were black, is because you're seeing the taint around the outside of it. The thing is that Rand and Nynaeve use pure spirit to cleanse Sidene in Winter's Heart. And I'm wondering now, where did all the taint go now that that's happened? Because That seems like that same sort of thing that the Dark One kind of uses to insulate the male Forsaken against the taint that he placed on the One Power.
Awesome.
That's interesting. Well, he collected all the stuff into that big black ball that imploded over Shadar Logoth.
I actually want to revisit some of the points Virginia made a few minutes ago about the various types of linking and bonding, and how Melaine, the Aiel who couldn't contribute to the first sister bonding of Avienda and Elaine, because it may have complications with the pregnancy. I'm not sure how specific they talked about it. I'll have to look it back up. But I'd like to tie some suspicions in that to the suspicions of what's going to happen with Avienda's babies. But at any point in time, the bond that Rand shares with Avienda and Elaine and them is a unique individual kind of bond that Elaine has created for the first time. It's not something that has generations of tradition and, you know, practices and stuff. She's done something different than everyone else, and who knows how that may affect any children that are to come, even her own. But there's that prophecy that unique things will happen with Avienda's babies. Men foresaw this, and I'm thinking that maybe they will be born bonded to each other closer than any other twin. What do you guys think?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense to me. I think they actually said something odd about them, which I think four is pretty odd all by itself, but I had rather thought that possibly they might be actually born channeling rather than starting later, you know, around puberty or whatever, when most channelers start to show the spark, if they have it, or start to be able to be taught. What do you think, Andrew?
Yeah, that's kind of what I was... that's my original assumption, was when they said there was something, there would be something odd about it, was that it might be an indication of the spark as opposed to latent channeling. But I don't know. We've got a lot of interesting things that go on, particularly within the Third Age, that just seem to spring up that are completely new for all we know. First and foremost being like men's ability to read the pattern. No one's ever seen it before or heard anything like it, so it's very possible that with all the spirit that's been flung around in these various linkings, that, you know, it might actually affect things in a more deep way. I had always kind of nursed a little pet theory that what happens in the world of dreams can be real, and I think in a previous podcast we discussed the possibility that Rand may actually impregnate her once he's returned to the heroes that are bound to the horn after he's passed on, which would be really weird, and at the same time, kind of creepy.
Yeah, that's a really interesting idea. They say that anything that happens to you in the world of dreams in Teleron Riad happens to you when you come back. The injuries that you take are real, and I suppose that it could be conceiving there, too. Well, one of the things I forgot to mention was that Morden talked about several things that were unknown in the Age of Legends. He marveled that these ignorant savages could keep coming up with new surprises. This was when he was on the tower in Ebudar watching them depart through the gateway that Avienda eventually unraveled, which destroyed the farm of the kinswoman. And he said that two things were unknown in the Age of Legends. One was the bond between Aes Sedai and Warder, a non-channeler, and also the involuntary linking, or an involuntary circle, which I believe referred to the Idam.
I'd like to go back and revisit the idea of spirit linking to the world of dreams. You have to think that there is a world or a place when you sleep that is just outside the world of Teleron Riad. It's halfway in between the Brie world and the world of dreams, where dreamers can traverse and see your physical dream. And if you don't have the right protections, they can pop into your dreams and manipulate you and do things and send signals. It's almost like your spirit is a broadcasted signal that if you know the right dial-up number, you can connect. And it kind of leads into another thought that I had, or at least another impression I had. There's a direct reference in The Shadow Rising that Avienda could actually connect to the world of dreams with the assistance of a wise one who was a dreamer. Now, to me, I don't know how close this gets to linking or spirit. Well, definitely we get close to spirit, but linking itself. The wise one seems to act as a mitigating factor, or as a channeler, kind of like the Terangriel do to help assist non-dreamers into the world of dreams. So, in a sense, the wise ones are able to perform a task that a Terangriel, long forgotten, the use of it is able to do. And I find that very, you know, cool.
Yeah, and they didn't even say that it had to be a wise one who could channel either. They made it reference many times to the fact that dreaming was not linked to the ability to channel at all.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's rather significant too. I mean, since we're in the discussion of Teleron Riha, that is the spirit is the only power that can be channeled while you're asleep.
Right.
So I mean, there's always been those ties to, you know, what is spirit, you know, in its essence. You know, is it like channeling your soul? Is it, how do we reconcile what spirit is?
I don't know how to answer that, but I've got some things on my chest I'm going to spit out there really quick. Wolf brothers. Wolves, Teleron Riha, all very tied closely together. Min. Min sees symbols and futuristic things much like Egwene does in the world of dreams. She's almost a waking dreamer. But to resolve what spirit is, you have to kind of understand that if it's not directly related to the One Power, because obviously Wolf Brothers are not related to the power, Dreaming is not related to the power, and Min's not related to the power, maybe we should go beyond thinking that spirit is only a power-related thing. We have the power as Aes Sedai, if we were Aes Sedai, to influence fire, influence water, earth, air, influence spirit. Then we have to acknowledge that spirit is not the One Power. It's something outside the One Power that Aes Sedai can influence.
You know, in this case, what the power is not just spirit, but everything is. It might just be, if you are a channeler, you are able to tap into the sheer essence of the universe. And I don't think I've ever actually said it that way before, but it makes a great deal of sense when you're thinking about sorcery. Or, you know, the use of the source.
It does touch a bit on the whole sacrilegious feel.
No, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, that's the way the White Cloaks feel about it, certainly. They talk about channelers being able to tap into the source that drives the wheel of time. So, I mean, you are talking about the source of the universe, basically the main force of the universe. And something else that kind of occurred to me that goes back to what we were talking about a few minutes ago is that a lot of the reasons that these bonds were created or established by the channelers seem to be as a way to have some form of communication between another person, because they didn't have anything like telephones or text messages or any of that stuff. But they did in the Age of Legends, so there may not have been the drive for them to establish these forms of linking and bonds because they didn't need it. They had technology. And the other thing that kind of popped into my mind a minute ago is that they evidently had some forms of the power that might have been translated into technology, because they talked about something that no longer existed called the standing flows, where they could use things like the call boxes and so forth, and non-channelers could use them as well, but the standing flows no longer existed. And I thought that was an interesting reference.
Sounds like a network of wires or telephone poles.
Yeah,
yeah, I always
it does.
Thought of them as kind of electrical cables or something.
Yeah.
Just, huh.
Yeah.
So I'm going to try to bring this conversation to a close. We've kind of bounced all over the place. It is a very broad subject with a lot of things going on. I really respect how Robert Jordan's introduced spirit and linking and all the various aspects of it. I don't know if we can define it, because really he was the only one that ever really knew how to perceive it. And unless we get more information in this last book, we're going to have to perceive everything as being not fully understandable unless you are an Aes Sedai or someone who wields a power that involves spirit in some way. I'd like to continue a format in the next few shows with this casual conversation. I'd like to hear people's feedback on if they like us having these conversations or they'd like to see a different type of structure to the show. Email us again at podcast@dragonmount.com. Sorry if I sound like a broken record. Virginia, you are fantastic, and I hope to have you back every week from now on.
Oh, I'd be happy to come as long as you want me. I hope people enjoy it. I'm having a great time. I love this.
And Andrew, thank you for working with us so easily. You're so easy to work with, and you make us feel so welcome. It's really great.
Absolutely.
Well, I wanted to say thank you, both Andrew and Virginia. This has been, in my opinion, a wonderful new beginning here for the Fourth Age podcast. I've always loved discussing this wonderful series with anyone who has any slight interest at all in Robert Jordan's works.
The Elfin and the Elfin will be the topic of the week next week, and we'll talk about the Game of Foxes and how it might actually be played. I'm kind of curious if it's like Snakes and Ladders or something else completely different.
And we won't believe anyone who says they won the Game of Snakes and Foxes, right?
All right. Well, this is Andrew Miller signing off.
Okay. Thanks for listening, everybody. This is Virginia signing off for today, and may the light shine on you.
I would just like to, in that same vein, remind everyone once again, send us comments, feedback, theories, anything you possibly can think of, because we look at it all, and chances are we will probably discuss all or at least most of it at some point in time in the future. So from all of us here at the Fourth Age Podcast, and from myself, I would just like to say, Saravya Ninto Manshima Tai Shite.